I'm Dr. Howie Jacobson, and this is the Plant Yourself Podcast. Each week, I bring you a conversation with someone who's making a positive difference in the world. And for my day job, I help leaders and their teams master their mindsets so they can achieve great things. To find out more, check out the Mindset Mastery Memo, my Substack newsletter. You can find it at plantyourself.com/memo. And now, today's show. I'm Dr. Howie Jacobson, and this is the Plant Yourself Podcast. Each week, I bring you a conversation with someone who's making a positive difference in the world. And for my day job, I help leaders and their teams master their mindsets so they can achieve great things. To find out more, check out the Mindset Mastery Memo, my Substack newsletter. You can find it at plantyourself.com/memo. And now, today's show. This is the Plant Yourself Podcast. I'm Howard Jacobson of plantyourself.com. So if you've got some holiday cash lying around and you're looking for something to spend it on, like on yourself, I got to say, I can't think of a better place to put it than the Big Change Program. But of course, I am completely biased. BigChangeProgram.com is where you can find out about making 2017 your best year ever in terms of health, happiness, control over your life, getting rid of the toxic things that no longer serve you or maybe never served you, getting to your ideal weight, and getting off all those meds. The 30-plus folks who have joined us, me and Josh, on the last Big Change program, which is still going strong, we have half a year to go, have seen some remarkable changes and growth in their lives in ways they could not have predicted or imagined. And I've never felt so good or confident or happy or honored about anything I was participating in my life. So if you're interested, check it out, bigchangeprogram.com, and you can go there and take a test drive. There's not going to be that much time left. We're closing the doors on January 9th, but if you're interested, check it out. And of course, full refund if you're not happy, because I don't need the karma of people who are unhappy with me and want their money back, and I won't give it to them. So no risk for you. The only risk is for me and Josh to say, we think we can help you. All right, on to today's episode, the final episode of the Plant Yourself Podcast for 2016. My guest today is Clay Garrett, who is not famous, and he hasn't lost 300 pounds, and his story is actually very heartening to me because it's doable. It's accessible for just about anyone. Clay grew up in East Texas near the Arkansas border in a small town, 5,000 people. His dad was the ag teacher, constantly teaching classes on how to cook meat, how to prepare meat, how to produce meat. His sister did, you know, the 4-H projects on raising chickens and then was aghast when she was told she had to kill them and eat them. And, you know, you grow up not really questioning those things. Little kids question, of course, but when we grow up and we become mature, we just no longer question kind of the way things are. And it was Clay's digestive problems that led him to cast about for different ways of eating. And in our conversation, we talk about the costs of the standard American diet on Clay and on his family, what he did, the little steps that he took that could just as easily, like we all know, hundreds of people who are miserable in their lives and we can attribute it to food and they don't want to hear it and they don't change and they suffer and they go to the doctors and they get pills and they get progressively worse. So I'd like us to listen in Clay's story for like the molecules of space where he had options, where he had choice, where he had openness and how one little thing led to another and how Clay has become a plant-based activist, parent, and marketer. I met Clay because out of the blue, he sent me a new graphic for the Plant Yourself podcast saying that the old one wasn't very good. And man, he's right. And the new one is just beautiful. I've gotten a lot of compliments. And so just, you know, in these small ways, we can all put ourselves forward to make the world a better place. And Clay's been working with Josh Lajani as well. He's been working with the Forks Over Knives to do some of their graphics. And it made me think, like, all of us have these gifts, and they may seem little or inconsequential or trivial to us, but if we all put them out there into the world, we create lots and lots of movement and lots of change. So without further ado,
Clay Garrett, welcome to the Plant Yourself Podcast.
Thanks for having me, Howard.
It's a pleasure. So you have not, like, lost 300 pounds. You haven't written books. You haven't, like, you're sort of a normal person who has adopted a plant-based lifestyle, which is actually quite refreshing.
It's funny. I've actually thought about that a lot, and thinking about when people have regular people on podcasts and thought, that guy's not me. I found it hard to relate sometimes to the guys who've lost 300 pounds or, you know, were an athlete in college and came back to running or something like that. I haven't done any of that. So
right.
I feel like I've been on the island a little bit. So
yeah. So I think it's kind of fun because, you know, those stories are fantastic and they're inspiring and they're instructional, but there's also, you know, the rest of us, and I, you know, I really enjoy speak because even, you know, even though you're normal, you know, in those terms, like, you're also extremely unusual in that you have made this shift that is so important for your own health and for communities and for the planet, and almost nobody else has. So, you know, you're still kind of cutting edge. So I'm very excited to kind of explore, like, what it looked like in your life. So can begin by just, you know, like, talk about your childhood. So, like, where did you start?
Well, I grew up in a small East Texas town near the Arkansas border, and maybe 5,000 people. And it was the usual Southern meat-eating, hunting sort of family. My mom didn't do a lot of, my parents both worked, so my mom didn't do a lot of extraordinary cooking. It was pretty quick, pretty simple things. But there was always meat and butter at every meal.
Uh-huh.
So that's sort of how I grew up and sort of how I lived, really, until recently.
All right, and you wrote to me that it wasn't just that you were eating it, that you had sort of family connections with the production and processing, right?
Yes. My dad actually was what they called an ag teacher, just an agriculture teacher, and he taught all sorts of stuff around animals, horticulture, that sort of thing. But he actually taught a specific class that was only about meat. And I believe it was called The Meat That We Eat. And it was everything from what went into producing the meat all the way up into how to cook the meat on a grill in a meat lab that they called it. So that was pretty interesting.
Uh-huh. And I'm guessing, you know, so on the Texas-Arkansas border, this is all very normal and natural, right?
Oh, yes. This was a pretty popular class that was sort of demanded by the public. An ag teacher is a very common thing in Texas. They have conventions. They have stock shows where they show animals and, you know, the animals, you know, impress the judges and the people who watch sort of bid in sort of an auction way, and then you don't leave with the animals if you get all the way to the final sort of a contest. You know, somebody buys an animal from you, then they take it and slaughter it or use it for reproduction or something like that. And so all that's very common.
Okay. And you talk about your sister had a project with chickens, right?
Yes, she was actually, since my dad was the ag teacher, she was very involved in it. I wasn't involved in it in high school, really, but my sister in particular was really involved. And she had cows and goats and chickens. And I just remember this one instance with chickens where she probably raised 15 chickens or so. And after the end of the season, we had to slaughter the chickens and eat them. And of course, my dad wanted my sister to be a part of that, and she was just horrified by it. And so, I mean, he did it himself, and then we stuck the chickens in the deep freezer and ate them eventually. And it was still, even at that time, it seemed a little strange. You know, my sister had clearly had a positive sort of feeling about these chickens, and then to eat them later, even after crying about it, she still ate it. We all still ate it. And so it seems just kind of funny then.
Yeah, I mean, it reminds me of, you know, Charlotte's Web. You know, it was one of my favorite books of all time. Just the disconnect between, especially kids, who I think are much more able to be in relationship with a wider variety of partners, right? So kids can be in relationship with dolls, with toy trains, with animals, with trees, not just with, you know, other people or adults in their lives. And just to hear, you know, your sister like, okay, well, I'm eating this thing. Just, I don't know whether it was like, you know, enforced by guilt, like, you know, other people go without, or this is the way things are. But there, you know, there was that kind of early disconnect. And we, as I think we learn as children, to distrust our impulses to be in relationship.
Definitely. And, I see that with my children now. I've got a 3-year-old and a 2-year-old, and every animal from a squirrel to a cat, you know, to a dog, they want to come into the house and keep. And so, I mean, they've got no, obviously, 2 and 3 years old, you have no idea about eating the animals. And so that has to sort of be forced out of you, you know, that love, or at least that connection between the love and the life of the animal.
Yeah. So what was it in you that started to be uncomfortable with the, you know, the let's say exploitation, the use of animals for to serve our needs through their deaths?
It's hard to pinpoint, really, but it was always something. I always considered myself an animal lover. And at some point, it just sort of, in the back of my mind, I thought, how can you love something and kill it and eat it? And that sort of voice in the back of my head just got louder and louder and louder. And it just became this thing I couldn't really ignore anymore. I couldn't feel like I was living in alignment with my own beliefs, basically. And I've always sort of been a person that questioned conventional wisdom, as in, you know, you have to eat meat or you have to do anything. I always think, maybe you're right, but has anybody ever thought maybe you don't? And so I do that about a lot of things, and eating meat was just one of those things that finally I said, maybe it's time to really take a look at this. Clearly people live without eating meat and butter and cheese and everything else. And so isn't something that's impossible to do. How are these people living?
Right.
And did just sort of took off from there.
Yeah. Did that attitude of like, let me question things, and especially things like, you know, the diet of your community, did that get you in trouble or alienate you in any way?
Not really. I haven't really got any pushback from, my dad would say things, or still says things like, that'd be pretty good with a little meat in it. Or, if being vegan was like this, I could do it all the time.
Uh-huh.
But I don't really got anybody sort of outright questioning me. And, I had a friend actually in the middle of me going vegan who went vegan, and it sort of opened up a community to me because he had a bunch of friends and things like that that I didn't know. And so that sort of kept me insulated a little bit. And then I moved from that area to the Little Rock area, and it's a little more open here and a little more accepting of just the culture's different here. And so that's kept me insulated from I only get that sort of attitude when I go home and visit my parents. But it's still not a big in-your-face sort of thing. It's just sort of like a snickering attitude.
Uh-huh. And did, like, were you vocal about any of this, about even your questioning, you know, like when you were in school, when you were, you know, a dependent under your parents' roof? Because it sounds like your family, especially your dad, was pretty invested in his role. Like, I could imagine, like, if I had a job and my kid at some point was like, you're doing a bad, you know, this is bad. Like, it might bother me.
It, not really, only because my dad sort of transitioned out of that type of position into he's an administrator now in school. Uh-huh. And so he isn't involved in the agriculture part anymore. And so by the time he was aware of me changing diets, it wasn't really an issue. And I don't necessarily present the animal side of it at home, or I sort of present more of the health side to it. And so that disarms a lot of people anyway.
Uh-huh.
It comes across more as caring about them and yourself than animals. And that is a huge component for me anyway, so it's not hard to sort of present that side.
Right. It's interesting because, you know, so many people, you know, when they start to make this transition, they make such a big deal out of social influences about what's my family going to think about. People are bracing themselves, especially, you know, we're talking like the week before Thanksgiving about going home. And it sounds like that's not necessarily a big dynamic. It doesn't have to be.
It doesn't have to be. And so my family had some minor health issues, like you mentioned, with the stomach, you know, issue earlier we talked about. And my dad has some high cholesterol and some high blood pressure. And so the health thing is easy to present if you have those already sort of in your family. We got some cancer history, some things like that. Just intuitively, people sort of know more vegetables is good. And so he's eating more vegetables. And so it's not a huge, you know, it doesn't have to be a big thing.
Uh-huh.
But obviously the traditions of something like Thanksgiving and the turkey and all that could get in the way of some families. But a lot of times me and my wife just bring a couple of dishes of our own, and people end up loving those anyway.
Yes.
So.
I've had an experience where I brought something so that I can eat it, and it's gone. It's the first thing gone.
Yes.
So tell me about, you said you had some stomach issues.
Yeah, and they were there what seems like my whole life. They would keep me from going to school sometimes. I would have to almost orient my life around it. And it would, I would go to the doctor. They couldn't, I went two or three times. They just couldn't figure it out. And I just thought it was something I'd have to live with.
What were the symptoms?
And
what was the experience like?
It was cramping, diarrhea. I'd be in the restroom for half an hour. It, you know, 10 minutes before school, I'd have to go to the restroom. I'd be 30 minutes late for school. I'd have to leave class in the middle, stuff uh-huh. like that. And it was something I had to sort of to live around. I had to know where the restrooms were during college. On the way back home, it was an hour and a half drive, and I had to know where each restroom was, how far away it was, if I could pass this one up. You know, I couldn't, certain things I just knew I couldn't eat if I had to go somewhere and I couldn't use the restroom for an hour. Wow. That sort of stuff was stuff I had to live with and live around and build schedules around almost.
Oh, so that sounds like a full-time job above and beyond everything else you're trying to do in your life.
Yes. And there were plenty of instances where I didn't do things because I was afraid that I'd have to use the restroom. It would be socially, it would be very awkward. You know, so it was something I had to constantly think about.
Wow. So as you describe the symptoms, you know, several potential diagnoses immediately pop into my mind, you know, irritable bowel, Crohn's, all sorts of things. You said did the doctors come up with a diagnosis for you?
No, and they couldn't even, they didn't even begin to. I mean, it wasn't really something that even got off the ground. I always assumed it was the IBS, and my mother thought it was lactose intolerance. I almost think now it's overeating, honestly.
Huh.
But
so you were you were a big eater?
Yes, I always felt like, you know, I don't know if subconsciously or what it was, but I always ate till I was just stuffed. You know, the feeling people talk about after Thanksgiving dinner was kind of sort of how I felt after almost every meal.
Huh.
That sleepy, you know, couldn't move, stomach hurt just from overeating, basically. And so I think that was, I honestly think that's what it was now looking back.
Uh-huh. So what do you think drove that? I mean, it's not like, you know, you didn't know that that was going to happen, right? Like, you'd be eating, you're like, okay, I'm full. Right. Let me eat until I hate myself, as Louis C.K. Right. says.
Well, at the time, I didn't make the connection that that's probably what it was. So that's part of it. And I liked food. Yeah, I mean, I wasn't a fat guy or anything, but I liked food. And I was athletic enough that I didn't gain a lot of weight. And I was young also, and so I didn't put on a lot of weight. I didn't really put on, I was probably 30 pounds overweight at the most when I was, you know, out of college in my mid-20s probably. But I was never super overweight or anything, and so I couldn't visually tell it was hurting me, and I didn't assume that physically inside it was actually the problem. So,
right, but you still ended up every meal sleepy with a stomach pain, and you can't move. Like, it's a...
Yes.
Like, that wasn't, like, enough of a clue, right?
Right.
So...
Exactly.
So, yeah. All right, so... Take us to the moment where you decided to try something different.
I don't know where exactly, but it was about 5 years ago that I actually made a vegetarian change. But probably for 6 months before that, it was something I was looking at and thinking about. I was watching a few of the Netflix documentaries. The Joe Cross documentary, I think, was the first one I really watched. I watched the Food Inc. was the other one. Those are the two, and Supersize Me. Those are the three I knew about. And so I watched those and thought I should really do something different. Vegan wasn't really a thought yet, but I thought I'll go vegetarian. And I just had sort of been asking my wife in a joking way, what do you think about being a vegetarian? And she was just sort of like, whatever you want to do.
Huh.
And so I said, oh, I'm going to do it. And it just never, and from that point forward, it's just sort of rolled on. I've sort of dropped lots of different foods, as people do, and ended up at the whole food plant-based
So what,
thing what, over 5 years now, yeah, down the road.
So why did you ask your wife in a joking way? Was there something you were, you know, afraid of, or?
Yeah, I think so. I think there was, you know, there is sort of a outcast feeling about it, and I figured it was something that I would probably have to do on my own a little bit with some assistance from her, but she wasn't going to actually go vegetarian, and so I knew either I'd have to do some more cooking now, or it would be on her to do a little more cooking. And so, you know, it was one of those things I just thought, I'm just joking unless you say yes.
So it's kind of a protection, a buffer against rejection.
Yes, exactly.
What do you think her attitude was? You know, it's like, whatever you want to do could be interpreted a whole bunch of different ways. Like, what was she thinking when you said that? Do you know?
I think she thought it would be an experiment. It would last 2 weeks, and I'd be on to something else.
Uh-huh.
So I'd get interested in some other thing that I've been talking about for 2 or 3 months,
uh-huh.
So whatever that would be. So, I don't think you thought it would be permanent by any means.
Uh-huh. So what did it look like? Like the difference between the way you had been eating and quote going vegetarian? Like, did you just drop things and, you know, triple the portions of the other stuff, or did you like go out and like buy a new pantry?
I started out, I didn't know really where to begin. And, so I bought a book. I think maybe it's not, I think I bought Alicia Silverstone, the Kind Diet book was the first one I bought. Because my idea of eating was you just have three recipes a day. And so let's just get new recipes. that was my thought process. I was like, we'll just get new recipes in here. And so that's how it began. And I think that specific book had three levels of from easy to hard. And so we just did a bunch of the easy recipes, and it wasn't really an issue, except there were a bunch of salads, and I wasn't a huge salad. I wasn't a huge vegetable eater, believe it or not. And so I was having to get used to salads, and I didn't love that. And so it took me a while to kind of catch on and figure out what I liked and what I didn't like and how I could make it filling for me.
Mm-hmm. And so at this early stage, you're like, you know, I'm living now, I'm moving towards like my values, but I'm not enjoying my food. Were you still like eating to stupor, or were you kind of being more conscious of the process of eating?
I was definitely being more conscious, just because your idea of vegetarians is, you know, they're skinny, and so they must not eat as much. It's not just that they eat lettuce and carrots all day long. It just must not eat as much food as I eat also. And so I was eating less. I was being a little hungry sometimes. I'd have to get snacks in between meals, things like that.
Uh-huh.
Just doing a lot of smoothies, that sort of thing.
So what motivated you those first couple of weeks? Was it simply the idea that I'm now like not eating meat, which feels right to me, or were there other motivations and rewards you were getting from the process?
There were other, the stomach thing was definitely sort of settling a little bit. And the driving force was the animal thing, just the not eating meat. So I was still eating the dairy. I was drinking dairy. I was still eating the cheese and the butter and the oil, all those sorts of things. But I definitely felt, my mind felt better not eating animals. And I hadn't quite made the connection that there was still animal abuse with the milks and all that. But I was definitely feeling better from that perspective. And like I said, the stomach thing was settling. It was getting a lot better, which I didn't think necessarily would be one of the benefits, but it turned out to be as big a benefit as anything else.
How long did it take you to realize? Because, I mean, that sounds like it would be profound if you, all of a sudden you had your life and your sanity back around, you know, restroom management. What did you notice, and when did you notice it?
I used to, after every meal, I knew within an hour I was going to be in the bathroom, and it was going to be a long time. And so that went away very, very quickly. And there's a lot more fiber going at that point too, so I'm sure that was part of the regulation. But almost immediately that changed.
Uh-huh.
And I noticed it just as soon as it changed, I noticed it. And my wife noticed it. Yeah, it was a profound change.
Did you trust it? You're like, wow, this is like, it's almost like I'm putting myself in your shoes. It's like, too good to be true. Like, I don't want to give myself that much hope in case I'm disappointed, in case it's like a little temporary glitch.
No, I was actually very, very excited. And at that point, I felt my actual attitude was, I don't know if that was the problem, but until I get something different, this is what I'm going to do. Like, I don't need to know what the problem was. I just need to know what the answer is. And this is the answer, and this is what I'm going to do. And so, I mean, I trusted immediately.
Uh-huh. That's great. So, you started out with three new recipes a day. A lot of them were salads, which it took some getting used to. That sounds like very labor intensive and potentially exhausting and unsustainable. Did you evolve to greater efficiencies or different understandings of how you could eat this way?
It was a progression. And of course, I got into all the fake meats and the fake cheeses, and the fake meats were pretty good. My wife hated the fake cheeses. Uh-huh. They would go bad in the refrigerator because neither one of us could stand them hardly. And it was a struggle for a few months. And then one day I was on YouTube and I saw Dr. McDougall's video on the starch solution. He talked about potatoes and rice and beans. And it never clicked to me that, oh, those are also vegetables. So once I figured that out, it was really easy to just throw some baked potato, some black beans, and some salsa in the microwave. And now I got lunch.
Uh-huh.
And so that's really when the labor-intensive part of cooking sort of came down, and it was much more manageable. It was very little salads at that point, which probably isn't great, but much easier to sustain than trying to eat two salads a day.
Sure.
As a meal. And so that was a huge relief, and I don't know if I could have made it without realizing that this side dish could be the whole meal if I had two potatoes, if I had a cup of rice instead of half a cup of rice. This could be my meal.
Yeah. And it sounds like you found it more satisfying. Not just easier, but the...
That sort of almost allowed the amount of food that I had previously eaten without getting the sick feeling from eating it. I could eat a potato till I was stuffed, but 5 minutes later I felt just like I had before I ate the meal. I felt great. That sluggish feeling lasted 5 minutes, not 3 hours.
Uh-huh.
And so if I wanted to stuff myself, I'd be okay, very, very quickly.
Right. So at what point in this continuum, this journey, did you drop the vegetarian and decide you were going to go fully plant-based?
That happened about 3 years ago. So 2 years of being a vegetarian, then at some point I just said, what I realized was I had dropped enough things that eggs and milk were the only two things that were still left. And so I just said, you know what? I'm not eating those anymore. And I think it was some sort of New Year's resolution type thing. And from then on, that was it. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't hard, by the way. That part was very easy because it was so little. And I hadn't necessarily planned it. On that, I just slowly but surely saw each health benefit of cutting butter out and cutting cheese out. And then eventually just the milk and eggs were in foods that I ate. They weren't the foods that I ate.
Uh-huh.
And so I make if I just have my wife make a cake without eggs, there goes the eggs. You know, that's where it was at that point. I wasn't drinking milk
right,
or having scrambled eggs.
So what made you think that you wanted to get rid of eggs or milk? Because I know lots of vegetarians, and most of them have been, you know, like vegetarians since the 70s or 80s, and that's their whole identity. And, you know, they have every Moosewood cookbook ever written. And, you know, 2/3 of the refrigerator is dairy and eggs. And it's harder to reach those people than it is to reach, you know, carnivores. Like, so what was your impetus? What information or realizations or insights did you come to so that getting rid of dairy and eggs was a lagging indicator of that?
Well, in advertising, you know, you can't hide that a piece of meat used to be a cow, but you can sort of fool people into thinking that this cow that gave you the milk enjoyed doing that. But these, you know, like these chickens that are laying these eggs, you're not really hurting anybody. They're just wandering around in somebody's backyard dropping eggs. But in Arkansas, it's one of the largest producers of chickens and eggs and that sort of thing. And you'll just see these huge trucks, these cages of chickens in the smallest cages you can imagine, just driving down the highway. And you know that those are either going to be killed at the chicken plant or those are going to go lay some eggs. And so that was right in front of me. And so I knew those weren't happy chickens. And so that motivated me a lot on the egg thing. And obviously, if you come to that realization about chickens, it doesn't take long to figure that out about cows either. These dairy cows can't be happy cows. And eventually, they go to slaughter also. And so that sort of, and then there's the health thing, obviously, with the cholesterol, the fat, the pesticides in the milk. I mean, it's just, you can pick any of them you want for any reason. And so
right.
I just sort of picked them all.
So what happened when you dropped the last animal products? Did you notice additional improvements in health and vitality?
I can't, to tell the truth, I couldn't tell then, but I've realized in the past few months how much better I feel now compared to then. Like at the time, there wasn't some huge shift, but now I can just tell in my alertness, and I've recently started getting up and taking up jogging in the morning, and it's really been no problem at all. And that sort of stuff. I couldn't have done that 3 and 4 years ago. It would have been a huge ordeal for me to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and go for a jog.
Uh-huh.
Now I can jog 3-4 days this week, take 3 days off, then jog another 3 days, and there's not really this huge loss. You know, I haven't lost my ability to run in those 3 or 4 days. And so I don't think that would have been, I wouldn't be capable of that. That's just a few, you know, 3 years ago.
Uh-huh.
So recovery time, the distance in between workouts isn't some huge thing that I have to gain back that I've lost in that time frame. And I feel like that's because of the diet.
Right. So how has your eating sort of spread, or has it to, like, you know, to your wife or your parents, other, you know, sister? Are people following and noticing, or are you still all alone?
For a long time, I was all alone. Like, my wife was sort of a step behind me almost. By the time I'm switching to vegan, she's cutting out the meats and being full on vegetarian. And so she was always sort of a step behind me, but she was getting there every step of the way, basically. And she was sort of the only one. But now my sister-in-law has seen the change. My wife had diabetes. She had type 2 diabetes just maybe a couple months ago. She went to the doctor. The doctor actually told her, "You no longer have diabetes." And so because she switched to vegan recently, maybe in the past 6 months. My sister-in-law saw that, and she's now a vegan. She's lost quite a bit of maybe 50 pounds. Her diabetes is getting better. She actually had to switch doctors because her doctor wasn't trusting what she was seeing as far as the diabetes coming down. And so I told, you know, she lost 50 pounds. The doctor wanted to put her on more diabetes medication.
Oh.
And I told her, I said, you have to get a new doctor. And she did. This new doctor's much more conservative. He's lowering her medication. She still has diabetes, but I feel confident that it's going to go away. It's definitely getting better. A few weeks ago, I had me and my wife were out hiking, and we had a friend text us and ask us what he can do to cut out the few remaining animal products. I think he was really asking for sort of substitutes, easy substitutes for a few spots where he uses eggs and butter and things like that. And so that was sort of a nice surprise. You know, he didn't tell us that we had influenced him, but we had influenced him. We were back in my hometown a few weeks ago, and a friend of my wife's asked her what she could do just out of the blue. And so these influences are coming up to me. I'm not necessarily seeking them out. I'm not really just seeking out that person. So these people are coming to me, and it's a very welcome thing. So.
That's nice. Now you have children, right?
Yes, because a three-year-old son and a two-year-old daughter.
All right. So I imagine you're both, go ahead.
So they're both vegan. My son was sort of vegetarian early on, but he's been vegan for most of his life. And my daughter's been vegan her whole life, and there's been no problems, no issues. My wife was worried about the soy milk thing at first, because there's a lot of talk about soy milk and estrogen sort of stuff, but that's sort of been debunked for the most part recently. You know, it was really debunked a long time ago, I think, but that talk has sort of died down a little bit. And so she's more comfortable with the soy milks, and she really likes the cashew milk, stuff like that. And so, but also we have a garden, and our kids are involved in gardening, and they can make the connection between picking the food and then eating the food, and sometimes to eat it right there at the garden, whether they want to or not. And I offer a huge batch of sweet potatoes, and my son loves sweet potatoes. And my parents still haven't come to grips with the fact that our kids aren't going to eat meat. I've heard my mom say that our kids don't eat meat yet.
Huh.
So they're quite ready to accept that they're not going to eat meat. But, you know, there's plenty of foods you can give. You know, there's the fake cheese for macaroni, stuff like that. You know, you can still give kids things like that, like pizzas every once in a while. I mean, they have some of that stuff. But they have lots of peanut butter, lots of potatoes, rice.
Do you think it's hard?
Not really.
Yeah. Do you think it's hard for your parents, maybe especially for your mother, to feel like you know, when you're the grandparent, you just kind of want to spoil the grandchild. You want to like give them all these treats and things from your childhood. Do you feel like maybe that's part of the issue, like putting a little pressure on? Like, when are they going to eat the good stuff, the grandma food?
Yes, I think that's actually, me and my wife talked about that. I think people will struggle with this idea that kids just don't want those things until you give those things to them. They don't come out of the womb craving chocolate. You know, they don't want a sucker. Now, once you give it to them, they'll want it, but they don't just naturally come out wanting all these sweet things. And so you're not giving them something that they want until you give it to them the first time. and then they want it. And so there's just, these kids aren't craving these things. And so I think that's the issue, a lot of the issue, is they want to feel like they're giving them something they really want, but they just don't want it.
Right. Right. So you want them to have it more than they want it.
Exactly.
Right.
I think I said that exact phrase. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, grandma wants to be the one associated with that chocolate cake.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Definitely.
So you are a graphic designer. And so you have a full-time job at a hospital system in Arkansas.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
one way that you're giving back, in addition to just sort of being like a chill, healthy guy who goes running and whose wife is cured her type 2 diabetes and people come up to you advice, but one way that you're giving back sort of more overtly and intentionally is to help people like me with our graphics. So what got you into that form of service?
Well, it all pretty much started with your podcast graphic.
You looked at it and you're like, this sucks.
Well, it's funny. What actually happened was, I don't know how familiar you are with Google Music, but all of the podcast graphics are all sort of laid out in a grid.
Uh-huh.
And so I think yours is right next to Rituals in my viewer. And Ritual, at some point recently, updated his from him running to him sitting in the back of a pickup with a bunch of vegetables.
Uh-huh.
And my thought was that completely shifted the preconceived notion about what his podcast was about. Just something that simple as changing that picture.
Uh-huh.
And so I thought, what can we do for Howard that, it, in essence, shows what his podcast is about, but make it very simple? And so that's sort of where the idea began.
Gotcha. So you reached out to me, and I, of course, was all over it because I'm, mm-hmm. you know, I don't have any ability or even awareness of graphics, and you made this graphic for me that I'm so grateful for, and people have been commenting on even without me, you know, asking, like, hey, you know, it looks so much better. So that you've also helped Josh Lajani, and you've done stuff for Health Fest. What do you think is the value of improving our collective graphics? What does that do?
Well, at the most basic level, I mean, I work in a marketing department, and so improving the marketing of the whole food, plant-based, vegan, compassionate, whatever you want to label it, improving the marketing of that, you know, the packaging around that, we don't have the millions of dollars to pour into advertising that the meat and dairy and eggs and whatever else, exercise equipment, whatever it is, we don't have the money to pour into those advertising venues, and we can have, you know, professional marketing, professional looking graphics to present to people that can at least put us on the level with those huge companies there in the graphics sort of area.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that's pretty important. Yeah. The packaging.
Yeah. I mean, when you, I don't know when you, I don't feel like I have much to like, I get it, but I feel like, you know, I've always thought of myself as sort of graphically impaired in a certain way. So I, you know, I kind of rely on other people, like, you know, when I walk into a room with my wife and she says, what do you think of the wall color? I said, I don't know. Tell me what I think of it, you know? but there's, there's definitely that sense that at least we need to put effort into it.
Well, and you know, there's the people at the forefront of this are, doctors and even just speak people writing books and going on tours and promoting those books. And they don't have a lot of time to think about graphics if someone doesn't do it for them. And so unless they have a big team around them, they have to do it on their own. They have to rely on somebody that they know who may or may not be actually professionally trained and know all the new technologies, the new trends and that sort of thing. And so I'm hoping I can sort of be that for people.
Right. So what was your involvement with Hellfest?
Actually, the friend I spoke about earlier who became vegan around the same time I did, he had been to Hellfest a couple times. He knew the people who put on Hellfest, and it takes place only about 2 hours from my hometown. And so he said, you should really volunteer. He said, they're looking for volunteers. Maybe you should. And he didn't mean from a graphic design point of view. He just meant at the event, maybe you can help.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, that's a really good idea, because I just sent you that graphic maybe a week earlier. And so I was sort of feeling inspired. I said, that's a great idea. Can you contact them for me? And so he contacted them for me, and they jumped on it, and I got involved, and the rest is sort of history. I've been working with them for a few months now, and they've done their flyers and their posters. A few of the ad magazines and Veg News magazines and stuff, things like that. And I'm working on a 5K flyer for them right now. And it's been a blast, really.
That's great. Because, you know, you've got this this passion for the lifestyle, for spreading the word, for helping other people be healthy and mm-hmm. feel better. And so many of us in this movement have that, but we don't know what else to do with ourselves. So either we get into mischief, like, you know, screaming at people and you know, turning people off and being that guy who's always talking about, you know, animal cruelty right. or whatever, and just, you know, not, and being counterproductive, or we just go about our lives and we do our thing and we don't think about what unique skill sets and connections do we have that can make a difference. And, you know, I wasn't a professional in this field when I started, you know, kind of like writing and doing the podcast. I had a $20 headset and that enabled me to get started. And you have a skill set in graphic design and a good eye for marketing and for spreading the word. And I think it's inspiring. I think a lot of us have more to offer in a positive, non-judgmental way than we think.
And that's exactly where I was. Like, I saw all these people. Obviously, I'm listening to you, and I'm listening to Rich Roll, and I know about Josh. And I'm thinking all of these people are inspiring and have something to offer, but I don't have anything to offer. That's what I thought. And I didn't, when I made that graphic for you, I didn't think this is what I have to offer. I just sort of felt compelled to make the graphic for you.
Yeah.
And once I sent it in, I realized, oh, this is what I have to offer. And so I think everybody, if they're passionate about it, has something to offer. And it might be what they're doing. They just don't know how to make to do that, or they hadn't at least thought about how to do that in this realm. And so I think everybody has something to offer.
Yep.
And sometimes it's going to be what they're already doing. They just have to sort of realize there's an avenue for that.
Yeah. And just, you know, if you think you have nothing to offer, then I would challenge you to challenge that. And if you're already doing something, like, you know, relabel and reframe it and kind of own that, you know, this is activism in the world. Because it feels like anyone who's not showing up as strongly as they would like to, it's like there's a, you know, you get that, like, 10,000 piece box of jigsaw puzzle pieces, and there's like pieces missing. Like you can't, they're all small, but you do not have that sense of satisfaction if there's a piece missing as when you put that last piece in and you've got the whole picture.
And you just don't realize, you see some of these people that inspire us out in front, and you don't realize, like with any other business, there's a bunch of people behind the scenes making that happen. And they're presenting the package, freeing up the time, whatever it is, they're allowing that person who's inspiring you to be that person and not worry about some other things.
Right.
So you can be one of those people who takes care of those other things.
Right. My grandfather was a musician and a conductor. He used to say, you know what the conductor can do with his baton if the musicians don't show up.
Exactly.
So we all have our piece to play.
Some people, there's a certain personality type of people that are out there, and there's a lot of people, at least I think, that don't have that personality type, and so they don't know what else they can do, and they don't realize all the opportunity that's there.
Right on. Yep. And I'm so grateful to you for first of all taking this journey, and then realizing, even if it was not like a predetermined sort of thing, like just the impulse to say, hey, I can be helpful here. I have something to contribute. It's helped me and my mission immensely. And now you're reaching out and helping other people, and now you're in front of the scenes a little bit through this conversation, and I'm sure you're going to inspire lots of other people, and so it goes.
That's what I hope to do, and I'd love to be doing this all the time, and I'm hoping that that's what it eventually leads to, is a full-time job doing this, because at that point, the hours don't even matter that much as far as, you think a 40-hour-a-week job, and you think, from 8 to 5, I'm doing this, and then I go home. And it could all be one sort of lifestyle, basically. So your lifestyle, your home life, your work life, it could all just be your life.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
That's what I'm hoping to make happen.
Right. Well, so for other people who are listening to this who have graphic design needs, how can they get in touch with you? I'll put all the links in the show notes, but just for folks who are listening, do you have an easy way for people to find you?
I do, yes. I have a portfolio available at Clay. Let's see. So I had it ready and then I walked off. I think it's clay.gear81. I don't remember how. I'm sorry.
I think you sent it to me. So let me quickly pull it up.
Yes, I had some stuff organized, and then beginning of the podcast went a little haywire. So
that's right. You're a graphic designer. You're supposed to be a little flighty, right?
Right. Yes, it's the artist in me that's forgotten the details.
Yeah, it looks like Clay Garrett 81, and Garrett is two R's, two T's. Clay Garrett 81 dot myportfolio.com.
Yes.
And if you can't remember that, just go to plantyourself.com, type in Clay. You're probably my only Clay. And it'll be there in the show notes. And you're doing great work for people who want to get the plant-based, compassionate, healthy, holistic, community supporting message out there. So if you're one of those folks and you've been doing it yourself like I have, and you're looking for a partner, Clay's your man. So give him a ring.
Yeah, please. I would love to do as much of this as possible. So. It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun to do something you're passionate about, and hopefully inspire other people, at least indirectly, by doing something like this.
Right on. Well, Clay Garrett, thanks so much for all you do, for all you've done for me, for all you've done for your family and your community and for the world, and for taking the time on the podcast today.
Thank you, Howard.
All right. Be well.
All right. Bye-bye.
If you enjoyed this episode of the Plant Yourself Podcast, please subscribe and leave a review on iTunes. And for more information about the Big Change Program led by Josh Lajani and myself, visit bigchangeprogram.com. And be sure to check out the show notes for today's episodes with links to the stuff we talked about at plantyourself.com/190. If you're new to the show, catch up on 189 archived episodes over at plantyourself.com. And if you get the podcast but not the weekly email newsletter, why not sign up for that while you're there as well? Thanks to podcast patrons Kim Harrison, Lynn McClellan, Anthony Disson, Brittany Porter, Dominic Marrow, Elizabeth Clifton, Barbara Whitney, Tammy Black, Amy Good, Amanda Hatherley, Mary Jane Wheeler, Ellen Kennelly, Melissa Cobb, Rachel Behrens, Christine Nielsen, Tina Sharp, Tina Ahern, Jen Volkanovsky, David Bizek, The Mysterious Michelle X, Elizabeth Feldman, Victoria Dolomanova, Leah Stoller, Alan Christensen, Colleen Peck, Josina, Michelle Landry, Julianne Roland, Stu Dolnick, Sarah Durkis Rhymes with Circus, Kelly Cameron, Wayne Peterson, Leanne Peterson, then maybe that'd be Wayne Peterson, Leanne Peterson, Janet Selby, and new this week, thank you to Claire Adams for your generous support of the podcast. Thanks also to Will Ridenour for allowing me to use his beautiful song, Sabali Don, Dance of Peace. You can find more of Will's music at his website, willridenour.com. Hey, let's do a fun drive this week for the Plant Yourself Podcast. If you'd like to support the show, whatever you donate, no one is going to match it. So you're on your own. If you can pledge a one-time amount or an ongoing gift to the podcast, you can do that over at plantyourself.com. If you feel like being generous, but you don't have cash on hand, but you have about 5 minutes, you could leave a review on iTunes, and that is golden as well. In garden news, we have been pruning our blueberry bushes with the help of a new friend, Alfonso, who has taught us that we have way too many old growth bushes, and there's lots of little babies coming up, and they're all cramped, and they need more room. So we've been transplanting blueberries and mulching and cutting off deadwood, and I can't wait for July. In running news, I did a very relaxed 20 miles on Christmas morning and saw all the other crazy people running on Christmas, including several people wearing the Santa hats, and someone had decked out little fir trees with baubles and tinkles and tinsels, so that was a very festive run. And looking forward still to the marathon in March. At this point, I can't imagine how I'm going to come in under 3:30, but gotta have faith. Got a whole bunch of cool interviews in the can and ready to start 2017 with. And I'm feeling a kind of openness and excitement to possibility, like expanding the mission of the podcast, expanding my own set of curiosities and interests, and expanding the variety of guests that I get on the show. So I'm sure some of you will love it, some of you will not. But what can I say? Life goes on. So wishing everybody a beautiful and happy and loving last few days of 2016. And let's go into 2017 eyes wide open, not kidding ourselves about the challenges in front of us, but also recognizing that we have the power of love and nature always wins in the end. So aho, let's have a great 2017. And as always, be well, my friend. Let's take this home with some gratitudes. First of all, thanks to Mama Earth. You have been so very, very good to me. Second, Will Ridenour donated the use of his beautiful song Sabali Don as the theme music for this show. You can find out more about Will's music at willridenour.com. Third, thanks to all the patrons of the Plant Yourself Podcast for your financial support. You can read the names of all the patrons at any show notes at plantyourself.com. If you would like to become a patron to show your gratitude for the work I'm doing and help support it, you can do so at plantyourself.com/gift. That's G-I-F-T, all lowercase.
And finally, I want to thank you, the listener, for making all of this possible, for giving me a reason to reach out to people, to have conversations, to edit, produce, publicize. All the stuff that I do is for you, so that we can continue to have conversations and continue to ripple out healing and transformation into the world.